outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey.
So Wayne, I ended up inadvertently finding out that there are more God Journey listeners here in Sheridan, Wyoming than I was aware of.
Really?
Yes.
And finally having coming out of the woodwork, have the courage to contact you? And
So that's the wild part, is they have yet to still contact me. I don't know if I'm the mysterious guy. I have no idea. I don't know what's going on. But I was having lunch with a gentleman today, and really cool God conversation. And he was like, wait a minute, you do a podcast, right? Like, you do a podcast with Wayne Jacobson. I said, yeah, I do, actually. And he's like, me and a friend of mine were just talking about that. And I guess his friend is on a really cool spiritual journey. He's on the police force here in Sheridan, and him and his wife are in a really intriguing space as they're exploring the next steps that God has for them. And part of that journey has been catalyzed by our conversations. So I don't know if he wants his name used on the podcast, but I want to give him a shout out because I'm sure he probably is aware of the demographics that I just described and who he is. That was really fun to find out, like, oh, okay, there is a law enforcement officer here in Sheridan that has been listening to the God Journey for a period of time, and it catalyzed a new journey that he and his wife are on. That's super cool.
Or you're too much of a celebrity that people feel like they couldn't get past your people to get to you.
Oh, good Lord. I hope that's not the case.
Me too. That just sounded, yeah.
Oh, that better not be the reality of what's happening right now.
I would hope not. I'm Wayne Jacobson, by the way.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And welcome to this episode of The God Journey. So we got a best thing.
I do have a best thing. We were in the conversation with some students today. I was talking with the students, and we were talking about what does it look like to engage and connect with people in attunement. And we were talking about specifically about physical contact and how do you greet people and what does that look like depending on your social circles. And I watched a student have the realization that they are much more engaged and personable than they even thought. So this individual was talking about how they're not very physically engaged. They don't like physical contact at all, et cetera. And we were talking in depth about how, you know, would you want to give somebody a hug if they needed it? Or what would that look like for you? And this person was like, no, I would never offer that, et cetera. And I paused the conversation. I said, wait a minute, but you did. Just 2 weeks ago in a mock counseling session, one of your fellow students was going through a pretty significant thing, and they started to have some tears and started to have an emotional reaction, and you offered them a hug. And it watching this person's eyes get wide and light up and be like, oh, I guess I am a physically relational being. And I loved that, because for them, they've been kind of standoffish in the class a lot. And for them to realize that they naturally bridge the gap between them and a person that they didn't really know very well, and were really able to be attuned and connect with that person and responded in a very natural and instinctive way, it was so cool. It was like this beautiful aha moment for the student that they were not expecting. And the student looks at me and kind of smiles with this like look in their eye, and they're like, okay, you got me. So it was so funny. Like, I was trying not to die laughing in class because they had realized that they actually were more of a relational being than they thought they were. So,
and what accounts for that, you think? It's kind of a conscious decision not to be, but they are when they're not thinking about it, or?
Yeah, I think this person has a perspective themselves in how they relate with the world. I think that is in the process of being untangled. They've got a very interesting, kind of pretty painful story, and God's been very much in the midst of it, some pretty cool ways healing this individual over the last few years. But I think there's definitely some untangling in their perspective between how they were raised in their family of origin to the way that they're connecting with people now. And I think part of that really has been what the Holy Spirit has been up to in this person's life. And even then, I feel like that's why they were so caught off guard, because it's almost like, oh, I just realized that the Holy Spirit's been doing more work and there's been more change going on in my life than I had expected. Because literally, like, right before I said that to them, they had very adamantly said that they would never hug a client. They would never be a person to offer a hug. And I was like, hold on a second. You did 2 weeks ago, like, without even thinking about it, you did 2 weeks ago.
So one's kind of like maybe a standard of counseling thought presupposition, but
yes,
it's hard if you care at all and somebody around you is going through a difficult moment. And I've seen it with marriages. I've seen it with, you know, a wife just reduced to tears and the husband sits right there, makes no move towards her at all.
Wow.
And I just go, man, how could you not? I wanted to hug her. I want to just hold her and calm that unsettled body. And he, for whatever the tension between them, whatever, it wasn't even a thought.
Yeah. That sound to me, that would translate to some deep wounds and a lot of resentment.
Oh, believe me, we had a lot of time to talk. Yeah, there was a lot going on. Sure.
Fair enough.
That was my first indication.
So what about you? Best thing that you heard or observed this week?
This has been it's just a phrase, but it was a phrase on top of a quote. It just talked about integrity as beauty. I love that, because mostly we think about beauty or whatever. We're thinking about outward appearance stuff.
Yeah.
And this was, he talks about the idea of integrity as beauty. In the Old Testament terms, this kind of beauty is precisely being what you're meant to be. Mm. So a lamb without blemish is just a really lamby lamb, not some kind of exceptional lamb, different from all the other lambs, but a lamb with all the right bits in all the right places. And that, I think, is a nice reminder to our own 21st century culture to question its obsession with standing out and its search for beauty that somehow sets you apart from others.
Ooh.
And I when I'm reading that, I'm going, you know what? That's, well, I look at the people I know and the people I admire and the people I have friendships with, and what I admire in people is integrity. They are true to themselves. And not everybody's capable of doing that, because there's a lot of untwisting. Sometimes that has to happen, particularly if you've been traumatized in various ways and you don't just feel free to be yourself. Yep. But man, when people become who they are and have the courage to live that way, and just being a really lammy lamb, that kind of definition, it's not the beautiful lamb. It's not the best this, the best that, which our society's totally preoccupied with. Even the dog show recently, we've got to find the best dog and the best breeds of, oh gosh, it's just so pretentious, when really that's not the point. Competition is not the point of beauty. Yeah. It really is the integrity of a heart. And I love that.
That honestly makes me think back to some of the dialogue around the stuff that was going on at Bethel and some of the dialogue that came up in the midst of that, where they were talking about prophecy and how prophecy in those settings. And this, I would say this was also in alignment with kind of some of my earlier experiences with prophecy, was that the prophecies are always about you doing something extraordinary and special, of being the awe-inspiring lamb, not just being the lammy lamb, being authentic to yourself and who God's created you to be. It's like, no, you're going to go change the world, and you're going to expire. You're going to inspire an entire generation, and you're going to blah, blah, blah. I mean, and it's always these fantastical statements. What about the statements of, you're going to love your wife well, you're going to raise a family to know my name, to know my heart, and you're going to be faithful to the things that I've asked you to do in your day-to-day life? I mean, why don't we have more prophecies along those lines?
I don't know. It doesn't sell tickets. I have no idea.
That's true. It does not sell tickets. It is not glorious.
It's that bent in all of us, right? That's the line in The Shack about, I'm especially fond of that one. And you hear that line and you want to be that. You want to be especially endeared to God, which is a comparative reflection. And you realize in the course of the book that God's especially fond of everyone, which I love that, because it kind of reduces that need to be special and need to stand out. And boy, with social media and all the stuff we deal with now, that's kind of where everybody's drawn into. And not just from a personal need on the inside, man, being able to stick out is part of your marketing strategy and branding and all the things that make us project an image rather than get back to the just the integrity of who God's made us to be and living in the world where he's given us. And I had that conversation a lot recently about not trying to push for the front of the room when Jesus said, just come in and take the last place. And if the master wants to move you up, he'll move you up. It's better to do that than get where you don't belong and somebody has to come to you and move you back down somewhere. And man, I think integrity is such a beautiful thing. And like a book I read recently where the quote was, when he met his wife to be, he said she was not only beautiful in appearance, she was beautiful in presence.
Yeah. And
I think that integrity makes us beautiful in presence, undoubtedly.
Yeah.
So what do you think? Have we started World War III? I think we asked that a few months ago when we bombed Iran for a few things, but now we're full on at war with them.
Wow. Yeah. Talk about some very major shifts that have occurred. It was really interesting. I was listening to this commentary that Simon Sinek was doing on building bridges between the millennial generation and Gen Z and some things going on there. And he was describing this experience that Gen Z was having, and you know, they were talking about these wars and blah, blah, blah. And well, then I realized it was pointed out to me that the interview was from 2022. It wasn't even when we're actually actively in war. It wasn't that we had invaded Venezuela and catalyzed a significant shift in their government structure. And now we're full on at war with Iran. It's like, whoa, what is going on right now, Lord? Like, we have moved into wars and rumors of wars in a pretty significant way. I don't know about World War III. I think we are definitely hovering on the edge. It could turn there very quickly, depending on where things go. But yeah, very, very interesting times.
Yeah. What does the younger generation think of these things? It's said that Trump's lost a lot of support among young people just because he had promised not to get into wars. That was a big part of his platform. And now with Venezuela and with some other places, and now, I mean, a full scale bomb the crud out of these people. And my heart just hurts. I tell you, I don't know the apocalyptic ramifications of this, but it is a superior power going after Persia, going after ancient Babylon, going after that same part of the world. I hold it very sensitively, I guess, in my own conversations with God about what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
And I think because, you know, I'm different. I think I'm different than I was 5-6 years ago, where I would have been more focused on the politics of it and what we're doing. Yep. My heart, without even trying, leans more toward what devastation are we causing among the people of Iran? Not the politics of Iran, not the people you may not like, but the devastation, the blowing up this girl's school where so many young kids were just killed. And yeah, that's what happens in war. Mistakes are made. It doesn't have to be targeted. It doesn't matter if it's not targeted. It's still, it'd be worse if it were targeted. That would be horrible.
Correct.
But to have some missile, somebody even said today, I heard it could have been targeted by AI that mistake that school for part of the compound they were trying to get nearby. Going, whoa, we're putting missiles in the hands of AI bots who we know make mistakes. We know that.
Yes.
If that's absolutely true. My heart's been heavy on the heavy side of the ramifications of what we're doing. Was there some cause? And I'm a little frustrated again at our politics in the sense that mostly when a president in the past has gone to war, he's very quickly made a case with the American people as to why this was important.
Absolutely.
Yep. To somehow create, all we've heard is they were getting close to doing some really bad stuff. But there's no case been made for those things. And people who listen to this podcast know, I don't trust our current president enough to say his whim and desire to create a name for himself on the planet and blow things up and do stuff out of the norm just for the fun of doing it. I don't trust his perspective alone. I want some other people, Congress people, whatever, standing with and being consulted about and making decisions together. But I don't think we're having that.
Well, and I think that's the intriguing space is also to my knowledge, this is the first time that we've gone to war without congressional approval as well, where he makes the case to Congress of, hey, this is what's going on. And Congress is, the majority is Republicans, his own party. And so if his own party is in control of both the House and the Senate, then why not go and say, hey, this is my belief. This is where I think we're going. I think these are the geopolitics behind it. These are the justifications for it. This is why I want to do this. I don't know. It's very intriguing to me. And I agree with you in regards to the devastation, and especially after they take out most of the leadership in Iran of the previous regime, and then they install the son, who was supposed, according to a lot of the news reports that I've listened to, is as much of a hardliner, if not more so, than his dad was. But he was doing things in the background behind the scenes that were potentially impacting a lot of the things that we saw globally from Iran to begin with, that it was the son that was catalyzing those things. And so
we threatened to get him too. We'll keep correct. Getting, we'll absolutely. Keep killing the leadership until we get the leadership we want. And that's not at all. My concerns here are not to justify Iran. Iran is the chief exporter of terrorism in the world. It is a horrible regime, horribly captivating for its families and people. And it's oppressive and it's horrible. Even if you left Iran alone, the life the people live in Iran is very questionable. Unless you're a hardliner, join the Islamic jihad in the world. Yeah. But then I read this today. This gave me some pause, and I thought, man, we probably ought to talk about this. But this is according to Mickey Weinstein, who's the founder and president of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, which is kind of a clearinghouse for complaints in the military that they can't really pass up the chain of command because it'll get killed by the next person above them. But over the last few days, they have received 200 complaints from 50 different military installations where the commanders are especially delighted with how graphic this battle will be, zeroing in on how bloody all of this must become in order to fulfill and be in 100% accordance with the fundamentalist Christian end of the world of eschatology. So one of the complaints said this morning, our commander opened up the combat readiness status briefing by urging us not to be afraid as to what is happening with our combat operations in Iran right now, and urged us to tell our troops that this is all part of God's divine plan. He said that President Trump has been anointed by Jesus to light the signal fire in Iran to cause Armageddon and mark his return to Earth.
A CO said that, or that was in the briefing?
Yeah, it was in the briefing by a CO of a military, and there's 200 complaints from 50 different that this kind of talk is going on among our military leaders, which isn't surprising given who's in charge of DOD or DOW, if you want to use a switch on it. When they went to calling it the Department of War, I had no idea that they were really serious about going to war somewhere and looking for the opportunity or taking advantage of it or whatever to try and crush. And I know Israel's real partnered in this, that they were part of driving the timing on this. Oh man, I tell you what, if that is behind it all, if there's people who are going, we need to bring in the coming of the Lord by creating a war, stuff went on like that in Israel during the period between Malachi and Matthew, trying to force the Messiah to come. That never turns out well.
And again, I think about, too, why was Jesus not recognized by so many of his people? Because he didn't come as described in Revelation on the white horse with a robe dipped in blood, the blood of his enemies. That was not how he arrived at all. And
nobody tried to pull off when he got here.
Correct. When multiple attempts were made to move him into a kingship that would allow him the authority and the power to be able to cause that uprising or just to activate that, that was not the direction that he went. And so for me, I have close friends and family members that are currently being deployed or are deployed right now and have a long family history of being involved in military service. to me, this is an interesting question of what is going on here and what's catalyzing this? What's activating this? Is that because, I mean, I think about the fireside chats that were had with the American community and the American people. And I was like, this is what we're doing. This is why we're doing it. Here's the most recent update. I want to keep you informed so that you're aware of why we're doing what we're doing. What is the heart behind it? What is the direction behind it? What's the plan?
And that was Franklin Roosevelt, a lead up to World War II, because America then was basically an isolationist nation. This is a European war. Let's not get involved in another European war. And Franklin Roosevelt was convinced if we didn't, Nazism was going to spread way beyond Europe. But he had these fireside chats. Like I said, I need to bring, this is good leadership to me. You bring the people along with you. You don't just, good leadership is not, I'm going to do whatever I want and then people have to lump it back home, or trust me, I'm doing the right stuff. I've got everybody's best interest in mind. I don't trust our leaders to that degree. I want them to make the case, because ideally the American people are the government of the people, by the people, for the people, not somebody doing it on our behalf who says, I know better than you.
Yeah.
And so this gets very difficult for me, because I think particularly this apocalyptic language behind it. Now, I wrote It's Time. In my heart of hearts, I don't think we have more than a half a generation before this world comes to an end. I could be wrong about that. I don't have a date from Jesus. I'm not trying to offer myself as some prophetic prognosticator, but I am looking at the state of the world and looking at a lot of things, from AI to the environment to whatever. And if we have a president who's trying to close the gap between now and the end of the age, he's working very hard to get there. And if that's the influence of the NAR, the New American Reformation thing, which it sounds like their language. So I haven't heard that that's their particular bent on this thing, but it wouldn't surprise me. And what that leads to, because here's two emails I've gotten recently from people that I just want to read you in this climate. About our podcast. One is from someone in Germany, a young woman. She says, your podcast is like a breath of fresh air to me because I do not hear what you're saying anywhere else. I live in Germany and do not attend a church, and I'm very careful with media, so I hadn't heard about Bethel or the NAR. I had no idea that there's a plan behind all that, and this so unifies many believers that it totally leads away from Jesus. I understand now that there's a philosophy behind it, and it influences so many streams in the charismatic world. I did not know that NAR thinks that Christians need to take dominion over society. How can someone knowing the Bible believe that? Which is, I'm with you, girl. My best friend began to think she could learn how to access the heavenly realm and from there exercise authority over the earth, like obviously quite a few Christian leaders think. This is the way to follow Jesus. I have heard you say that you lost dear friends because of differences of beliefs. I did too. To me, that was unthinkable. I still cannot understand how this can happen to someone who earnestly wants to follow Jesus. We are called to serve, to be the least, to give our lives away. Quite a few leaders that had my general trust do not have it anymore. I'm an outsider more than before, but Jesus is worth it. And with him, I'm an insider. And that is what counts.
That's a great email.
I appreciate that response to it. I mean, it's a stretching, learning thing for her, but she's willing to go, man, maybe I've had some things not quite right. And then I'm seeing the abuse of that in my friends who are now trying to take dominion over the earth, not in the way the scripture talks about it. Because the idea of, like you mentioned, the first coming of Jesus wasn't to establish justice through power that the Israelites hoped for. They hoped he would take on Rome, he would take on whatever and deliver them and freedom from the bondage and captivity. And like we talk about in Just Love, the justice was going to come from in the inside. His kingdom was within us, not outside of us. Yeah. And you see the same mistakes being made today of people who want the return of Jesus forced by the fires of rebellion in Iran or Middle East or whatever. It's a provocative time. If you got your eyes closed to what's happening and you're not reminded when you fill up your car with gas recently, are at war. And this could, like all conflicts, you think you can just go bomb Iran and back out of it, or bomb Iraq and back out of it, or bomb Afghanistan and back out of it. Wars always have unintended consequences. And now with Russia helping Iran target their missiles to help destroy servicemen, it won't take much for this to become World War III. And I'm not saying it's going to. I'm just saying all the pieces are in place.
Yes.
And I think even more so, and that's my book, It's Time, was not, it's time for the coming of Jesus. It's time for the sons and daughters of God to be revealed. Mm. That justice would be won in the heart, not the geopolitical arenas that we kind of want to take the shortcut to changing the world instead of letting our heart change first, beginning to live that justness in our own arena, and then watch how God takes that on in a wider way. I look at all that going, I'm intrigued. This is part of my prayer and conversations with people because I want to know what God's doing in our day, not what our world geopolitical leaders are doing. Hmm. And then I got this email, it's quite a bit different. It says, you and Brad helped me shift my paradigm of thinking, raising my awareness of and helping remove barriers I had in place that were blocking God in my life. So God for that. I enjoyed the podcast so much that I pretty much listened to most of them. I really wish you would not talk about politics. Well, I'm sorry, man. We were talking about it today. And, you know, we always try to make it clear that that's what the podcast is about. And if it's not for you, please feel free not to jump in. He said, it'd take months to listen to one of your podcasts from last year because it was offensive to me. You only had one side of the conversation being presented. The biggest thing that left me so revolted was the apparent hypocrisy of some of your points. When previous government administrations did the same or far worse and were never brought up in your earlier podcasts.
Hmm.
You know, my response to that is, I hate when people do this because we criticize some things the Trump administration's doing. And I've been positive about other parts of it. I like some things that's been done. Mm-hmm. But then, oh, you must be a Democrat. You must be on the other side. We also talked about problems during the Biden administration, and there were many. I am neither left or right. I don't fit into either political party right now, not for anything.
Yeah,
I don't mind talking about politics with people who see it differently than me. In fact, I'm intrigued by people who think Trump's God's answer to whatever's going on in the universe. And I don't mind having an honest conversation with them. But what I really hate when you start trying to discuss and somebody says, oh, you must be on the other side. You listen to mainstream media. You listen to fake news. It is an inability to have a rational conversation sometimes with people who are like this, just saying, oh, you're hypocrites because you didn't criticize the other side. No, I think we did. And we did extensively. So vilifying a world leader for moving pawns on the world stage, I think it was my quote, because of the hatred toward their style of leadership or failures in public relations. Again, don't put a motive to my heart that you don't know. I don't hate him. And I don't think it's a failure in public relations. I think their public relations are absolutely deceitful. If you even watch one White House briefing by that press secretary, I can't even stand to watch because that's the opposite of the integrity thing we talked about up front about how beautiful integrity is. My goodness, that woman will say anything to justify her boss because that is her job. Her job's not to be truthful. It's not to be honest. It's to be public relations for the president. So he said, because of the hatred or the style of leadership, whatever, it does not fit the platform for the God journey, especially when the American system has been messed up by weak and conniving people to the point that the style of leadership is legal, and I would argue required, or at least the most viable option. I have no idea what that's supposed to mean.
Hmm.
But to me, again, he's telling me we don't have the right to our opinion, but I'm going to call the other side, which you're on in his mind, conniving and evil. And what it comes down to, he says, I find it ironic that you disparage the party that at least somewhat follows the laws of the land and does not endorse the slaughter of babies while not condemning the party that wants to bypass the laws of the land. God is a God of order, not chaos. Our desire should be a government led by people trying to establish order, not by people sowing chaos. It's amazing to me, and I appreciate the sincerity of the person writing, and I wrote back saying I appreciate it, the fact that you want to share this with us. I also don't think the podcast is necessarily for you, because we know a lot of people who think very differently than this. And see the chaos coming from the Trump administration. It's not, the Democrats have all of it right and the Trump's all wrong. No, I've said often, I think both parties, I think we've given over politics to expedience. There's not much truth. There's not much compassion. There's not much sincerity in anything that's being done by political leaders. And people who go to Washington, whatever, they may go there with the great idea of being a positive influence on an environment. But as we've heard so often, they can't stay there and do that. Because the idea of getting reelected and the amount of money that needs to be raised, it's a problem. And if we're not aware of that, if it's just, hey, it's all a mess, but I'm choosing this side because it's most what I want, I think that's part of the problem. And I wrote him back and I said, look, I don't fit into the binary system. I don't. I'm a fan of neither political party at this point. I don't think anyone holds the best interest. I don't think one values the Constitution more than the other. I think they're both running roughshod over it to try and get whatever they want, including how things are being reapportioned in the U.S. for the next election. It's all about winning elections. It's not about representing the American people and trying to find out what the American people want, because I think the American people, for the most part, are better than the leaders we have now. But our political parties, both of them, are more interested in polarizing us than they are helping us resolve the problems that our country has at the moment.
And I think for me, one of the challenges that I have, especially as an educator, is if we can't have conversations where no matter what our political affiliation is, that if we can't have conversations about there's some really good things, like I really like these things, or let's talk about how these things are positively impacting society or culture or education or health. And if we can't have the same conversation, no matter who's in power, but to take a look at the leadership, to take a look at the trends, to take a look at some of the movements that are happening in today's society and say, I don't know if that's in alignment with the heart of Christ. Like it doesn't seem like the fruit of said behavior is in alignment with the example of Christ's life lived in the world. That to me is an interesting space to be in, because I feel like that's where we need to be getting back into having those spaces to where we can have a genuine, honest conversation, regardless of political alignment, saying, is this good? Is this healthy for us? Should we be doing this? Is this right? Is the local, state, federal, and global influence and impact of these decisions going to be a catalyst for the kingdom of Christ in the world? Or is it going to be sowing chaos? Is it going to be sowing destruction? Is it going to be sowing harm? Is it going to be sowing pain in the world? And if we can't have those conversations, then honestly, as I'm thinking about it, then yeah. I mean, then our leaders just shift to doing what they want to do, whoever's elected in office, because it's like, well, if I can't have a conversation with the people that have been elected by the people that are supposed to be representing the people and us explore what is the common good here, what is moving forward look like, what is the best way through here? If those conversations aren't being had anymore, if we can't explore those conversations, if we can't challenge those things, then we are in a, for me, a very unnerving space.
And for me, I wouldn't even begin to expect that a human government is going to reflect the priorities of the kingdom of God. I don't. Even if we had better political dialogue in our country, it's a human design system that's based on the exploitation of power. So it's based on untruth and deception to try and get your way. So I would never expect that, even in the best of all possible, not until the government rests on his shoulders, not until Jesus comes and takes all this back to himself. But at the same time, as a person in the democracy, I don't mind saying, my gosh, we're way out of bounds here. What we are now as a country compared to what we were 25 years ago is far worse, far exploited by power and money and influence. And in time, we're going to lose this democracy. Yeah. If we don't respect the will of the people, and I don't think we respect that. I don't think either party does. So this is not a right or left kind of thing. This would have been the best thing I heard this week, except I wanted to read it now. This is from C.S. Lewis in Mere Christianity. And he's talking about at his time, late 40s, early 50s, He's talking about the division between totalitarian governments and individualistic governments. That'd be like capitalism and socialism, what's going on in New York with the mayor and all that. It'd be similar to that. And he says, I feel a strong desire to tell you, and I expect you feel a strong desire to tell me, which of these two errors is worse? That is the devil getting at us. He always sends errors into the world in pairs, pairs of opposites. And he always encourages us to spend a lot of time thinking about which is worse. You see why, of course? He relies on our extra dislike for the one error to draw you gradually into the opposite one. But do not let us be fooled. We have to keep our eyes on the goal and go straight between both errors. We have no other concern than that with either of them. And I read that and go, that's so appropriate today. Right. The enemy brings things in so that we get to argue between left to right, between immigration and generosity to immigrants, or they're all criminals. We need to run them out of the country. We get to find, okay, this guy we think's better, or this position is better. So I get to really lean into that and vilify, which a lot of this letter I got, he might be a very genuine guy, but he sees any threat to what he wants to believe as something that's offensive and should be silenced, instead of, no, you're being tricked into saying the right has got God's heart behind it. And there's other people who would argue, even from a Christian perspective, that the left has God's heart behind it, that it's more compassionate, it's more this, it's more that. I love the idea that the enemy brings error into the world in pairs. So by sucking us into one side of the error and vilifying the other, we think we're right when we've embraced something just as dangerous to the world as what we think our enemy has embraced. What do you think of that?
Gosh, I think that's so appropriate to the human experience. I'm just thinking back through time and how frequent that experience has been. I do want to push back a little bit when you're talking about human government, because I think that God is very much in, like I look through scripture and there's a lot of conversation about structure and ways of doing things that move people into a healthier space, into a better space. Now, I don't think that humans have the capacity to do that flawlessly. I don't think they have the ability to do that in a perfect way or in exact alignment with the heart of Christ or scripture. I completely agree with you. Until he is the one that is dictating that, if he is the one that is in lead of that and inspiring that. And
he won't be dictating it. He will be,
yeah, he will not be
calling it out of us by transformed hearts and lives. Yeah,
absolutely. So when until that is the case, I don't think that we're going to see a priceless or flawless experience of this. However, I do think that in God's heart, there's this idea of structure and order and systems and support that come alongside to advocate for that. And I think that's the challenge for me, is the great American experiment that is what we're currently living in. It's very intriguing to me because I think a lot of the conversation around that was, what does it look like to bring some order and structure into this experience that's going to serve people well, that's going to create and hold space for people to be able to live a fulfilled life, or a life that is not under oppression and under dictatorship and direct, like explicit direction. And that, I think that's the part of the challenge for me, is it's not that I think the American government was the second coming of the Ten Commandments. You know, that's not what I'm saying by any means.
Sounds bad. Maybe second coming of the kingdom. But.
Well, by that, I mean, like, if our Constitution was in alignment, you know, with what, anyway. but I do think that throughout history, there's an invitation to, okay, Lord, what does it look like to move and pursue your heart, but also to create structure and systems and support that help care for people, that do help support people. And it's intriguing watching the tension between that, right? Like, because I think there's been so many, whether it be the institution of religion or education or government or policing. I mean, I think there's been so many things that have been done with good intent. And the challenge is that the longer they stand and the more people learn how to monopolize them, manipulate them for their own gain, gain power through them, then they start to become twisted and distorted expressions of what the original intent was for them. Even as somebody who is on the God journey, who has been in this process, who in a lot of ways is anti-structure, I think that God does have structure and these modalities of doing things that are good, are well-intended. I don't know. I'm still trying to put language around this. Maybe you can help me make some sense of this. I'm wrestling with, Lord, the same as I'm wrestling with the institution of Christianity and its religious system, I'm also wrestling with, okay, Father, but is there such a thing as good government or good governance, especially in the idea of justness in the world and your kingdom's justness in the world? Is there governance that is more wholehearted and more in alignment with your character and your nature? And if so, what does good governance or authentic or wholehearted governance look like, especially in today's day and age? And I don't know if it's even conceivably possible.
No,
what I'm hoping for is the return of Christ. I don't know.
Well, I'm hoping for that too, but I don't think I'm anti-institutions or anti-organization or anti-structure, because you have to have structure for things to work.
Yeah, absolutely.
My concern is that our structures are imploding from the inside.
Yes.
Because there's not a system humanity can divine that can't be manipulated, twisted, and distorted for money or power. And it seems like that's where it always goes, particularly as it gets bigger and more massive. The amount of money that's involved in the simplest decisions now going to that group of people or that group of people is humongous. I mean, I worked for 20 years in Bridge Builders to try and help us find the common ground again, where there's mutual respect for the other, that there's not this hostility for the other that I get in emails like this. There's a realization that I may disagree with you, but you have as much right to live wholeheartedly as I do. And our best government is not going to choose between us. It's going to find what can work for both of us. And that to me is what we've lost. That's what our founders strove for. They said, no, you can't put power in the hands of an individual and maintain that. You will always lose it, because what's nature, the human nature of fallen humanity, is toward power, toward control, and toward I want my way and I don't care what it costs you. And we as a nation, in the time I was doing Bridge Builders, most people were on the page of trying to find what's fair to our differences. And now I can't find that voice in our political culture. Yeah. It pretty much is, it's I'm right, they're wrong, they're going to destroy America if we don't take control. Both parties talk the same way. And that's where I'm going, you know what, Jesus, you better come quickly, because I don't know what'll be here. And maybe, you know, when you look at apocalyptic terms, maybe our society is at the end of its heyday. 250 years out of a democracy in the history of humanity is pretty big. And maybe it resets to something. But even if it resets now, so much, even our state governance, the talk is, well, we want this state our way. So you go to another state and you can live your freedom over there. And that's not the best of our humanity. The best of our humanity is, how do we share these things together so that we can all live in peace, even if you see the world very differently than I do? My guarantee of your conscience invites your guarantee of my conscience. Mm. And if we don't share that, so I think good governance is possible. I think the unwieldy, the size and power and money and corruption that is inside our government now, across the board, from political parties to lobbyists to whatever, we've got a system now that's totally infiltrated by money. It is corrupt. Something major has to happen for us to default to something else. Or maybe it's time for Jesus to say, yeah, I can't keep going watching you guys do this to each other. I'm going to come and show you what my kingdom looks like. And until then, we each get the choice to live in it ourselves. We can live in that kingdom today, not be disturbed by what's going on around us, and yet still be a voice for justice and kindness and compassion in America and in the world. But voices aren't calling us to that right now. So that's why I want to talk about it. I want to be a voice that says, hey, we can do better than this.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We don't need to have government be on our side as opposed to the other side. We don't have to buy into the binary realities of political parties. We can instead respond to Jesus in our lives and see what voice he gives us in the world to call for justice and kindness. And that's what I hope. And I could be out of my mind. Many people think I am.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.